The following commentary is for educational purposes only. Always consult the appropriate tax, legal, or financial professionals before acting on any information heard in this program.
Welcome to the IRA Brothers Podcast. I'm Nick Edwards.
And I'm Nathan Edwards.
And this is episode number 5, and we are about to begin a discussion about the most popular types of employer-sponsored retirement plans. And I think it would only be fitting that we start with one of the most popular types of plans, and that is the 401k. Most often, the discussion of the 401k plan comes up when clients ask us the simple question, should I be participating in my company's 401k plan? And Nate, the almost universal answer to that is what?
It depends.
There you go.
As in all things finance related, the answer, unfortunately, is not cut and dry. What the answer should be is always, do you know where to find your employer's plan document?
And why is that important?
There is an actual document that outlines all of the parameters of your company's 401k, and that is actually called the plan document. When I tell people, go and find the plan document, they say, okay, what's the name of the document? It's actually called the plan document. So the first step is to ask your employer, if it hasn't already been provided to you, to receive a copy of your plan document. Once you have received that document, you will be able to determine the various features of the plan available to you. Two of the most popular plans that we see are the traditional 401k and the Safe Harbor 401k.
And what's the difference between those?
A traditional 401k is usually found at a larger company. And that is because a traditional 401k can often be comparatively expensive to administer. The primary differences from an employee's standpoint between a traditional 401k and a Safe Harbor 401k are the match provisions. So the first question that we ask after we receive the plan document is your company matching? If the answer is yes, then our answer to you is yes, you need to be contributing to your 401k.
And the reason why would seem kind of commonsensical, but let's just state it anyway.
There are various ways that your employer can match your contributions. And in a traditional 401k, they have an almost limitless set of options to choose from. They can match 1% of 4% of your salary, or 2% of 8% of your salary, or the list goes on and on. We've seen recently that employers have made it relatively easy for their employees to figure out. So oftentimes we'll see things like 100% of 2% of compensation up to certain income limits, and then some percentage of match above that. But what we want to determine is, if you put in $1, how much is your employer matching? And that's the important question, because essentially we can look at that as a rate of return.
Mm-hmm.
So say in comparison, you put $1 into a brokerage account. Over a 10-year period of time, what rate of return would you have to earn to achieve one more dollar?
Well, the rule of 72 would tell us that you would need to earn a rate of return of 7.2% on average per year to make your $1 turn into $2 over 10 years.
That's right. So when people have the ability to contribute into a 401k plan that provides a 100% match, that is what they're giving up if they don't achieve the full match limit inside of their 401k. And unfortunately, we see quite often that people do not contribute up to the limit. Now, it's a lot easier for people to rationalize the 100% match, but the same is true even if it's a lower percentage match. So even if the percent is 30% up to 3%, or 30% up to 5%, or 40%, it doesn't matter. You have to look at that as a rate of return, because that's what you're giving up each year if you don't contribute that. And in true investment terms, that has got to be one of the largest mistakes that people make, because that type of return is very difficult to achieve via investment returns alone.
And we should probably also clarify, because we talk about this quite often, and for us it seems somewhat routine, but just explaining exactly how this match works when we say it's a certain percent of salary up until a certain dollar amount. What they are matching is the actual dollars you put into it. So if they're matching dollar for dollar up to, let's say, 10% of your salary, if someone was actually matching that much, they're not putting 10% of your salary in there. You've got to put that much into it. They'd stop the matching limit at 10% of your salary.
Unless, of course, you had exceeded the income limits, which we'll get to next.
Okay.
So on the elective deferral side, into a traditional IRA and a Safe Harbor IRA, actually, the amount that you can choose to contribute to your 401k in 2017 is $18,000. And that's assuming that you've made at least $18,000. So you cannot contribute more than what you've earned But if you were under age 50 in 2017, you can choose to contribute $18,000 into your 401k. Now, much like our IRA discussion from a couple of weeks ago, there is a catch-up provision. So if you're over age 50, you can actually contribute an extra $6,000 into your 401k for a total of $24,000 as of 2017.
That's right.
Now, on the employer side, they have the option to contribute up to a max of $54,000 total. So that includes your elective deferral also. So they can basically make up the difference between your $18,000 or $24,000, depending on your age, and that max of $54,000, which is actually $60,000 if you're over age 50. And they can do that in any number of ways. They can either match your contributions, or if they're very benevolent, they can just contribute to your account without you contributing at all. And those are called non-elective deferrals.
Where we see this taken to the extreme, we've had a couple clients over the years that are professional athletes. I'm thinking of one that was an NFL player in particular. And with their retirement plan they had, if the player put in even a dollar, the team would come in and max out the rest of it.
And that's right. So that actually clarifies a point that I just made, because I made it sound like the employer could only put in the difference between the elective deferrals and that ultimate max of $54,000 or $60,000, depending on the age.
Mm-hmm.
But they can contribute up to that limit for you.
And we should also add that from the employer's standpoint, these matching or just employer contributions are pretty much at their discretion as well, except for the safe harbor plan.
That's right. And so that's the big difference, and that's a good transition. In a traditional 401k, an employer can choose how much they want to contribute to their eligible employees' accounts.
And they can change that year to year, correct?
And they can, in a traditional 401k. But traditional 401ks are also subject to non-discrimination tests. And these tests are what make traditional 401ks typically a little bit more expensive to administer, because these tests have to be performed annually to make sure that the elite in the company, the fat cats in the company, aren't stuffing their 401ks while the rank and file employees are languishing at the bottom. And so to ensure fairness, they have to administer these tests on an annual basis, which can get kind of costly. And so the alternative to that is, as you mentioned, the Safe Harbor 401k.
And what sets the Safe Harbor 401k apart from the traditional?
So in a Safe Harbor 401k, one of the big differences is that the employer basically has two matching options to choose from. Either they can make, on an annual basis, a non-elective contribution to each eligible employee's accounts of 3%, or they can choose to match contributions of eligible employees dollar for dollar up to 3% of their compensation, and then 50% or 50 cents on the dollar beyond 3% but less than 5%. So in a Safe Harbor 401k, they have to choose one of those two options, either a 3% non-elective deferral, in other words, the employee doesn't have to contribute anything, the company just has to put it in their account, or they have to match 3% of the employee's contribution and then 50% of every contribution between 3% and up to but less than 5%.
Now, you mentioned a couple times eligible employees. What does that mean?
Okay, so typically, and these rules can vary, so you'll want to check your plan document, but typically, employees have the right to exclude from participation employees who have not achieved the age of 21 or have not achieved 1 year of service with that employer.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's another critical component, and that is the ability for employees to make Roth contributions into their 401k. Now, this is determined on a plan-by-plan basis, and so not all plans have this provision, but it has become increasingly popular, and we have encouraged more and more people to utilize it over time just for the purpose of tax diversification, which if you're curious, you can go back and listen to our Roth versus traditional IRA show to get our opinion on that.
And how would an employee know if they had the option of a Roth 401k?
Again, you could either call your plan administrator or just ask for the plan document, and it will be outlined in that. But it's important to note that only elective deferrals can be Roth contributions. So in other words, only the dollars that you are contributing can be contributed on that after-tax basis. Any matches from the employer side have to be matched in traditional 401k dollars or tax-deferred dollars.
That's an important point, so I'm going to repeat it. Even if you are funding the Roth IRA side of your 401k, if it is an option for you, the matching portion does not get put in the Roth portion. It goes into the traditional tax-deferred side.
So really, from a financial planning perspective, that's an easy way to achieve tax diversification, because you are making Roth contributions and your employer is providing you with those traditional 401k, those tax-deferred contributions on the matching side.
Can we shift gears a little bit and go to the vesting schedules?
Yes, please.
Okay, so an important component of having a 401k available from the employer's perspective is a tool for employee retention. And one of the ways that they get people to stick around at the company for a while is to attach a vesting schedule to the 401k plan. Now, what that means is simply you, the employee, if there is a vesting schedule attached to this plan, must be there for a certain amount of time to receive the matching portion, not your contribution dollars, but the matching portion if you decide to part ways with the company before you have met the requirements of this vesting schedule. There's typically three different categories this will fall under. One is immediate vesting, which means as soon as you put the money in and as soon as they match, if you terminate with that employer, you get to keep everything. The second method is what's called a six-year graded vesting schedule, where each year that you're there, you get to keep a larger percentage of the matching portion up until the sixth year where you get all of it. And the third is the three-year cliff vesting schedule, which means for the first 2 years, you will not get to keep anything if you part ways. After the third year, you get to keep all of it. And I should also add that these are the maximum lengths of time in which they may claw back that matching portion of it. They could institute something that allows you to have access to the matching portion shorter than these schedules, but they cannot exceed these schedules.
Now, that brings up another important distinction between the traditional 401k and the safe harbor 401k, in that in a safe harbor 401k, all employer contributions immediately vest.
One other distinguishing feature of 401k plans is what's called the loan provision. With IRAs and Roth IRAs, if you take distributions from that account before you've reached one of the qualifying events, which typically, as we've discussed in the past, is age 59 and a half, where you can take it out without paying any additional penalties or taxes in the case of a Roth IRA, you can take a loan out from your 401k plan. Now, there are certain rules that will apply to what you can take out, the terms in which it has to be repaid, and again, all of this varies immensely between the different types of plans. We encourage you to go and look at that plan document to see what the terms of the loan provisions are in your plan, if there are even any loan provisions, because again, even that is at the discretion of the employer who sets up the plan.
So one benefit of that loan is the fact that you would be able to distribute those dollars to yourself without having to pay taxes on them. You have to pay it back, though, because if you don't pay it back, you will be taxed on that distribution.
And a lot of people, if they have credit card debt or want to make a down payment on a house or something like that, look to the 401k plan because they say, hey, I'm borrowing money from myself. This might be a good option. But we often ask people a couple of key questions before they do that because there are some certain considerations you want to make. Primarily, are you certain or do you feel relatively certain you are going to maintain employment with that company over the duration of the loan repayment period? Because what happens if you sever employment before you've paid the rest of that loan back? It's treated as a distribution, whatever remaining balance. So let's say you take out a $10,000 loan from your plan and you've paid $5,000 of it back through payroll deduction, by the way. That's how that has to go back in there. If you still owe $5,000 on that loan and you sever from employment, typically most employers will give you about 60 days to pay the rest of that back. But if you don't, it's treated as a distribution. And if you're under age 59 and a half or haven't attained these other qualifying events, you will owe the taxes on it and possibly an early distribution penalty as well.
Another interesting facet of the 401k is that unlike the IRA or Roth IRA, in which you have to achieve age 59 and a half before you can take distributions, if you leave the employer through which you funded the plan after age 55, you can begin to take penalty-free distributions from your 401k plan after age 55, which is a full 4.5 years before you would be able to start taking distributions from your traditional or Roth IRA.
And of course, if you're taking it from the traditional tax deferred side of the 401k, the taxes will still be due on it, but not the 10% penalty.
That's correct.
So let's spend just a few more minutes before we wrap up talking about kind of the internal structure of most 401k plans, because these are different from like a retail brokerage account where you have lots of different investment company options, of lots of different investment vehicle options. What do you typically find inside of a 401k plan that may be different from a brokerage account you would open somewhere?
The first big distinction is usually that the investment options are limited. So either the plan sponsor or a paid advisor overseeing the plan or your employer themselves, or in typically in larger companies, it's actually an investment committee, decides what investments to put inside of this plan. These investments can range from a handful, you know, 12, 13, 14, 20, to some plans now allow you to pay an extra fee to essentially open a brokerage account inside of your 401k and have access to an entire universe of investments. But still, most employees that we see just utilize the investment options available to them in their plan. Since the rise of target date funds, we've actually seen that a tremendous amount of dollars are flowing into these types of funds that actually change their allocation as you approach the investment horizon date. And it's kind of like an investing for dummy strategy, not to call anybody a dummy, but it's just an easy way to try to achieve these objectives. However, this is one point of warning. Although it's convenient and it prevents other types of errors. If you are inclined to invest in a target date fund, please lift the hood and see what is inside of that target date fund, because from company to company and fund to fund, target date funds with similar labels can be incredibly different.
Well, since you mentioned it, and we should probably dedicate a whole show to it, give us a quick overview of what a target date fund, and sometimes they're called life cycle funds. What is that?
Typically, you'll see things like target date fund 2020 or 2025 target date fund. Usually, they run in about five-year cycles. And so the idea is that you would allocate your dollars to the target date fund that most closely resembles when you believe that you're going to retire. So if you're investing in target date fund 2057 and you've got 30 years to go, the internal workings of that fund will have a larger exposure to traditionally risky assets and a smaller exposure to more conservative assets. And the idea being, based on traditional finance principles, that the longer the time horizon you have, the more risk you can take. Now, as you age, or as you get closer to the target date your fund represents, the internal mechanism of that fund should become more conservative. And so it would, again, internally shift from more traditionally risky assets to more traditionally conservative assets. What we found, however, is that sometimes that shift is not as dramatic as one might expect. And so it's critically important that you understand exactly what is inside of that target date fund, particularly as you approach your retirement date.
And since Nate is issuing words of warning, here is one thing, and I like 401k plans. The matching component is huge. Where are you going to get instant 100% rate of returns on the dollars that you're putting into this thing? One of the deficiencies that we see, and a word of caution to people that are relying heavily on 401k plans, is that these plans, from the employer's perspective, they're looking at this, there's a certain cost associated with it, and a prudent employer is trying to keep those costs to a minimum. And where they usually cut the cost is on the service side of these accounts. Now, some will now charge employees if they want to pay it for a little additional advisor assistance. But because these plans are so easy, you hop online, you pick your allocation, you just kind of let it ride. I see this as something that gets neglected sometimes by our clients when they come in and they haven't changed an allocation in the 20 years they've been working there. They don't know how the funds have changed. Some funds have been replaced and they didn't even know it. So you have to exercise some additional diligence if you're going to try to go at a 401k plan on your own.
Not only that, but it is important to be aware of the fees inside of your 401k plan. So we make it sound like the blanket recommendation is if your employer is matching your contributions, then contribute. Typically, that would be the prudent answer. But you also want to measure that against, one, your investment options, and two, the cost of accessing those investments. Very rarely would the cost of the investments or the cost of the administration of the plan exceed the employer match component, but you still want to be aware of those numbers.
So this covers the broad strokes of the 401k plan from the employee side, what you will experience if you are an employee participating in your employer-sponsored plan, and it's a 401k plan.
And that just about wraps up our initial discussion of the 401k.